Hello again, it's BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing video game music and talking about the games they're from. Have a good listen. You know, before I begin, I just wanted to kind of say something. As you know, and I've credited before, the intro music for this is called The Bouncer, and it is done by Beatfox, and freely available to download online. But essentially, the media player that I'm playing that music track in, it has that, you know, automatically find album art sort of deal going. And, of course, the tune I'm playing doesn't have album art, but that doesn't stop the music application from actually managing to find some album art. So whenever I play this song in the my music player, I see the front cover music for the Bouncer soundtrack, which was, interestingly, a PlayStation 2 video game, which I have never, ever played, and assumedly the soundtrack for it. So I kind of find it funny that for all the music and album cover arts that the application could have found, it ended up finding one for the soundtrack of a video game. So maybe somehow the application just psychically knows exactly what sort of theme I'm going for here. But enough of that. On to the show. So, I'm going to start off with a game that's based on a movie, and so is its music, based on the movie music. Even though the game didn't quite get, you know, hugely high review marks and all that sort of stuff, I kind of like the game. So, let's start you off with the music.
Bad things coming to us, but I
And that was The Little Things, originally composed by Danny Elfman for the film Wanted. And what you just heard was the Uncle variation for the video game based on that movie. So Wanted was basically a comic book originally. I never really read the comic book, although I think I scanned a few pages, which involved some guy who apparently went into a police station, shot every single person there, and then felt upset about it because he didn't find it as thrilling as it should be. It's kind of messed up, and from what I've heard, the rest of the comic book doesn't actually get much better. But the idea is it kind of takes place in some world where the supervillains win, and essentially so supervillains run rampant, and there's this guy who's got caught up and he has to be a supervillain or some such like that. I'm not sure I'll actually ever read that book, but apparently for people who read comic books, of which I'm kind of one of them, it's known about. So essentially, as you can imagine, when the movie version came around, it didn't quite follow Mark Miller's original writing, and instead kind of turned into this whole other thing involving basically an everyday guy who was just doing his everyday thing but so completely frustrated with the mundanities of life. But thankfully he's hired by an assassin guild who teaches him to be an assassin, then he goes killing things. And then if you know anything about movie formats, you can tell that by at least some arbitrary section in the film, he's going to turn around and start shooting the people who, yeah, I think you can figure that part out. I actually liked the movie adaptation because under the direction of Timur Bakhmetov, he's Russian, originally did Night Watch, it's just so over the top and so much fun and so damn silly. It's really a turn your mind off and you'll really freaking enjoy it sort of movie. And you will need to turn your mind off because there are a couple of things that really, really don't hit the filter. But, you know, it's kind of nice. It's kind of a mixture between, you know, it's just nice seeing this guy, an office worker, so frustrated, suddenly grab a gun and suddenly start blasting through these over-the-top action sequences. Which brings us to the video game, which was developed by Grin. And yes, Wanted Weapons of Fate. Basically, it mixes you not only as you play as the main protagonist of the film, but also as the protagonist's father in some flashback sequences. And essentially, it gives you what you want. Over-the-top action with so many bullets flying around and just, yeah. It kind of falls into, you know, the sort of game that I enjoy playing, but, you know, I'm not overly convinced that this is a masterpiece or anything, and some people just don't like it, which is the same with so many games. But it's pretty fun. Essentially, it's a cover-based shooter. You hide behind things, you shoot at all these people coming with you, then you jump forward and start shooting again. Normally, all these cover-based shooters I get really annoyed about, but the great thing about Wanted is that, inherited from the movies, the guy's got the ability to bend bullets. So if a guy's hiding behind cover, you can, under certain circumstances, shoot a bullet so that it shoots up, curves around, and hits the guy behind cover. It's pretty damn satisfying. It's also got some nice slow motion bits and a few other things, but it's pretty damn satisfying to say, haha, try to do that, you idiot. Of course, it kind of goes against, according to the plot of the video game, some of the guys you're fighting against should be able to do the same to you, but they really don't for the most part. So yeah, generally I just see this sort of game and the movie has fast food, you enjoy action, blah blah blah, blast through it, feel decent by the end of it, and it mission accomplished. Alright, to awkwardly move on to our next video game track, here's something a little more ambient. Thank you. And that was Ambient by, unfortunately this game credits like three musicians, so I'm not sure which one specifically worked on that song or piece of music, but it was Yves Atlanta, Bjorn A. Lynn, and Joseph Shorrocks. It is from the game Hydrophobia Prophecy by Dark Energy Digital. Now, hydrophobia has a long and interesting story. I mean, I remember first hearing about it. People were so excited about it. Well, I mean, not excited. They were excited about the technology it would bring. You see, in video games, water is interesting. It's usually complex. What you normally have is just some, like, big square of water, and the front, the very top of it usually has this ripple texture, and that's fine, and that's pretty much it. Usually it's hidden behind something or under something, but usually it's basically has its surface animated, and then when you're below that surface, you usually float and move and shift and swim, and when you're above that surface, you're not affected. As you may know if you're in the real world, water doesn't quite act like that. For instance, having a game where, like, if you, like, burst open the side of a container, in video games, in order for the water to actually spill out the side, artists would have to actually construct how exactly it would spill out of the side in advance. It's basically scripting it, basically, a scripted experience, and have to animate exactly where it goes and what the water does, and basically make this whole canned thing. But of course, in real life, you know, water is highly unpredictable. You hit it, it splashes, it, you know, if you hit it, it causes waves. If you open up the side of a container, it will spill out, and each time you open it up, it might spill out in a different way. It usually tries to find the right level. I mean, there's so many different variations that water splashes, flows, spills, and everything. And even the movies, animated movies have had a hard time figuring out how to model water. I think the movie Ants was one of the first times that computer-generated movies finally got a handle on water. But in video games, everything happens in real time. You know, essentially, you've got only a couple of milliseconds to decide what form the water should be for every single frame of the video game. So naturally, it's a huge challenge to actually simulate water. Hydrophobia was like the first game to actually say, yes, we're going to do that. We're going to have water realistically splash and move and pour and slurp. It's going to be literally the next generation in water technology, and we're going to create a great big framework as well. So I remember, like, being on an internet forum with someone and saying, boy, this is the future. Think of the gameplay possibilities. And I was going, well, maybe. But the point is, you know, people were excited. And then there were, like, demos being shown off and say, yeah, this whole thing will take place on this catamaran, a gigantic ship. And we've, like, detailed the entire ship, and they're going to be terrorists attacking, and it's going to go, there's going to be water involved, and you'll be able to, like, break open sides of the ship, and the water will pour in, and then you can strategically flood areas and come back there later. I mean, there's so much buzz about this vibrant ship and all the water pouring in and everything. And then the game hit, and oh dear. I didn't buy the game at first. I was waiting for the review. The reviews were not good. In fact, they were pretty damn terrible. It got so bad that developers actually started criticizing some of the reviews, saying, you know, you can't just treat us like this after 3 years' work, or even complaining some weren't even giving the game the full effort it required. It's kind of hard to, you know, obviously they're in a biased position, but I don't know. I remember I did read one review and did actually feel, you know, the reviewer could have put a little more effort. But unfortunately, whenever you release a creative product, there's always going to be a bunch of uninformed people expressing their opinion on it. So there's not really, you can speak out about it, but if you're the one who created the product, then you're always going to come off as a sore loser. However, I feel I shouldn't be too harsh on Dark Energy Digital, because they actually did listen to criticism. They did recognize that there were problems with their games, and they did something that very few developers actually do. They pretty much basically remade the game. Well, not fully remade it, but they changed so damn much about it. They changed voices, improved graphics, improved navigation system. They eventually released this version as what they called Hydrophobia Prophecy, which they said was version 1.5, which changed some of the cutscenes, level layout, and so forth. And this is the version I played, and I kind of liked it. I mean, I'll tell you, the first time you really see the water in action, you're in the ship, the bombs have already gone off, the terrorists are attacking and everything. You rush down one gunmetal grey stairwell, you rush down the other, you open the corridor, and then suddenly the water, it pours in. It's a huge ripple, a huge wave coming right towards you, splashing by you. It passes by under your knees, it hits the back, reverbs forward, and suddenly you're looking around, seeing the entire corridor full up with water. You're rushing towards that door that's closing in front of you, but it closes. Suddenly it's up around your thighs, sometimes it's up around your shoulders. You have to start swimming, and then you swim under, and then you suddenly see the whole corridor from underneath the underwater, and seeing that the face, the top of the water above you, gradually raise its way up to the roof of the corridor. I mean, it was just that feeling that the video game just managed to reproduce of just suddenly finding yourself being submerged as the water rose ever higher. It was a great effect. And I mean, the game is full of far more water effects like that. Spilling water, you can burst open things and water spills out. There's a lot of enemies as well and stuff. And I just have to say, at the end of it, it was an okay game. I mean, I liked it, and I liked it. And of course, a lot of the game deals with shooting enemies as well. There's a whole fun system around that where you can shoot barrels and it blows up the enemies, or sometimes you can shoot cables and the water will fall down and hit water. The electricity cable will fall down and electrocute enemies, and you got a couple of different weapon types. But it was an okay game. I enjoyed it, and it was fun. I could talk a bit about the game. It's actually one of the few games to actually use overpopulation as a nice little plot element, since the terrorists are basically dealing against overpopulation. The water is great. When I was actually looking over some YouTube clips to see how they actually, you know, changed the game from its original version, I found out they actually completely revoiced one of the characters, who had this weird kind of Scottish accent, cut out some of the cutscenes. And here's the thing as well, they actually gave the game an ending. Yeah, this might have been something that actually people criticized the first time around. They were trying to make the game episodic, so it's like one episode and then finishing with to be continued. But I think they've given up on that, because this version of the game, you do get to fight the main boss and the main enemy at the end. And it is unfortunate to say that the game developer studio went bankrupt after this. Quite simply, the game didn't sell enough to make money. And yeah, I mean, the technology is shifting hands. I don't know whose it belongs to, but the guys worked for hard. They developed it. They kept trying to make a new version of it, and it worked. I mean, it's really admirable how they managed to create a new version of the game, but in the end it wasn't enough. And it's kind of sad as well. I mean, the water effects were just great, but it's just what they weren't enough on their own added to the game to actually make something of it. If the game had like worked to make the water effect something that really mattered, or made the gameplay actually dependent on the water rather than the water being an element in the gameplay. But such as it goes. I personally wouldn't have minded like a canal simulator made with the water engine or something. But that probably wouldn't have sold many copies either. I don't know. I mean, that's actually one of the really fun things about criticism or even just commentary on video games. We can all throw our own opinions, but how many of us have actually made a game from the beginning? Or just kept in a company, just hoping against hope that something good is going to come out of it in the end? It can just be an incredibly daunting experience. And damn, when a game finally gets released, the reception can be cruel. On that bright note, let's move on to our next game, Mirror's Edge, which was developed by DICE, which is a subsidiary of EA Games, and all about this parkour runner who's basically a runner, who's basically a courier, who's basically a refugee outlaw rebel against this totalitarian government. It actually sounds cliche, but if you actually look at the game, it is beautiful. It takes place other places too, which aren't as rememberable, but the main The area is this like blue crystal skyline of all these highly modern skyscrapers shooting off into the sky, and you're basically this parkour runner in a first person mode where you basically have to run and slide and duck and jump over all these obstacles. And so you wall run across building types and jump across and slide under pipes and everything, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's actually what the game is best at, you know, you trying to spin forward, hit the time, try to get everything done, sliding across cables and everything. And while the game is a little linear in that respect, it is actually a lot of fun. And to see that the blue skyline, I mean, it can just be beautiful. Much like Hydrophobia, it fell short of sales expectations, although it did, I think, end up selling around 2 million, so it's not exactly a terrible loss, but still. You see, the game kind of... I don't like going into the flaws of games. Let me just tell you that right now. I feel that for a start, if you look online or any place, people are always really willing to dive into the flaws of the game, to point out every single thing that's bad about it, almost as if they don't really care one way or another. But with Mirror's Edge, it's just beautiful when it works well. It is beautiful when maybe there's a couple of troops or guys in soldiers' armor coming behind you and you're just racing across. You're jumping, diving, ducking, and trying to find the best route and keeping your momentum up. That's the whole thing. The faster you go, the more obstacles you can cover. But it can take a while to build up that speed, so you have to be very careful and not turn too quickly. And it's like, plan your route in advance and just go for it. The whole idea is just the free-spirited, free-running aspect to it. And when it works well, it does. Jumping over skyline stuff. But unfortunately, there are these moments where you basically have to directly confront guys with guns. And it is actually pretty cool how you do it. You don't carry guns yourself. So you have to do disarms or just jump and attack them and hit them with their own thing in the right way. Or if you do grab a gun, you get a couple of shots with it before it runs out of ammunition. You have to throw it away. But the point is, it's just... these encounters are really cool the first time you do it, when there's a guy with a great big military gun and you're just this, you know, you're just this person in a couple of like loose fitting clothes going right up to him, just as they're about to hit you with the gun, you grab it, you spin around, you smack them in the face, you throw the gun away, and it's like, you know, you're so tough, you gotta have a gun. Well, I'm so cool, I don't even need one. And you just throw the gun away and just run on. And it's like this hilarious sort of like almost Roger Rabbit thing of all these guys with guns and machines and police officers, and here you are spinning, jumping, kicking, flipping your way between them and just making sure and getting through the level despite that. But that is the great first feeling of the game. But then it kind of repeats a couple of several times and it kind of gets annoying. And then you suddenly find these situations where there's a couple of serious guys with weaponry hanging around you, and you end up having to repeat it a lot of times just to keep getting the right combination and keep getting disarming at exactly the right moment and stuff. You see, the game could be improved in a few ways, and that's one of the people, a lot of people are asking for a sequel, but unfortunately a sequel isn't looking pressingly obvious, so kind of a pity of that. In terms of the music, a lot of it's great ambient stuff, but the great thing about it is one of its great pieces is the final track called Still Alive. Yes, I know, Still Alive is also the name of the ending Portal song, and the fact that two games could have released in a short distance from each other could end up having the same title name for their ending track is kind of a funny coincidence. But in this case, Still Alive was composed by Rami Jakob Arthnor Birgisson, and the performance and lyrics are by Swedish singer Lisa Miskovsky. They're both from Mirror's Edge by Dice, and that is the track that I shall leave you with. If you want to listen to this episode or more, podcasts and MP3 downloads are available on the Dublin South FM website. Thank you very much for listening. This has been BitNote with David Collins. Thank you. All the best.